Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Heroes, coming to you live from Radio City this afternoon at KMJ in Fresno and online at KMJNow.com. You know that each week we visit with veterans of World War II, and the idea really is threefold. First of all, we want to honor those veterans, those who served our country when we needed them the most for that service and the sacrifices that they made. We want to preserve their stories for the future so that years from now people be able to look back and know what happened during that crucial time in our world's history. And perhaps most importantly, the impact that I see is an inspirational impact. As we listen to these stories of our greatest generation, hopefully we'll be inspired to take the same view of our country, love our country as much, and be willing to serve our country the way that they did. And in my travels, it becomes clearer and clearer to me that no matter where you go in this country, no matter what your hometown is, you'll find some heroes in your hometown. Most of the heroes, and a lot of the veterans we interview don't like that term, but most of the ones that we talk to are male. This week, not the case. We're going to talk to some females who served our country during World War II. Officially, at that time, they were not part of the armed forces. Since then, they have been recognized as veterans, and this week they were recognized in a major way in our nation's capital. They are recipients of the highest civilian honor that our country has, the Congressional Gold Medal. They are the WASPs. I'm not talking about white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. I'm talking about women Air Force service pilots of World War II. There were more than 1,000 of them then. There are fewer than 300 now. We're going to hear from a couple of them today. But before we hear from those women pilots themselves, I want to talk to a young lady. She's not quite as mature as these women who flew during World War II. She's of a younger generation. She's the daughter of a WASP, and she has taken her genetics, being the daughter of pilots, and done something really special with it. Once she learned her own family's history, she has shared the history of a lot of women all over our country, and she's not done yet. Welcome in Nancy Parrish from Waco, Texas, and her brainchild is Wings Across America. I want you to go to our website, KMJNow.com, and you can link to Wings Across America to see everything that she's up to. Nancy, thanks for being with me today. I know it's been a whirlwind week for you, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I am so honored, and thank you so much for caring. This is just an incredible opportunity for us. Go WASP!
So, yeah, you have your own cheerleading squad built in. There's
no one with
more enthusiasm than the WASPs.
That's right. Oh, this is an incredible. It was an incredible week, an incredible honor for the WASP, and to get to stand and witness it was like witnessing history.
Absolutely.
That really made history.
And you've been preserving history. Tell our listeners how this got started, Wings Across America, and when it was that it clicked for you, hey, my mom did something pretty significant here.
Well, honestly, Paul, my dad passed away in 93, and my dad was a hero in our family. He had served as an Air Force pilot, been shot down over Yugoslavia, and we always saluted the flag, and I was an Air Force brat. When my dad passed away in 1993, I really started asking Mom about her story, and it became very clear very quickly that the story is much more interesting than I had ever imagined as a teenager. Of course, teenagers don't pay that much attention, you know, to their parents' history, and I got really involved. I was working at PBS and wanted to do a documentary, and I realized that one documentary just wouldn't make that big an impact, and started putting up Mom's scrapbook a few pages at a time on an internet site that I had. And all of a sudden, we won Yahoo Pick of the Week. I didn't know how to handle that. I thought, wow, this is incredible. People really want to know this story. And it really is an unsung history. And it had not been in textbooks. There weren't very many books on the WASP. And what an instant way to get the information out there. So we, Mom and I together, started a project called Wings Across America to make sure every WASP had a story to be told was told in a significant way. And we have digitally interviewed over 110 of them across the United States. And that's how it all started.
So, and how long has that taken you to get the 110?
Well, it took us about 5 years to do the 110, but at that point, we've also started a museum in Sweetwater, Texas. We created a traveling, I guess really what we've done is try to think of as many ways as we can to get the history out there in as many different formats as possible. And that's kind of how the gold medal idea started. My outside-the-box idea was a Fly Girls exhibit, which is a traveling exhibit. And that's now on display at the Women's Memorial in Washington, D.C. It will be there through the end of March. Mom's idea was something even more. She said it needs to be on a national stage. Mm-hmm. And she really is the first person that said, let's see if the Congress or the President would acknowledge the WASP with a medal. And she planted that seed about 5 years ago.
And this week it came to fruition in magical way for all of them.
Yeah.
I'm sure all the other WASPs were incredibly appreciative. In looking at your website, and that's wingsacrossamerica.us, it is linked at our website, kmjnow.com. Mm-hmm. Just on the front page there, click where it said WASPs get their due, and you can read all about this. But I was struck in looking at your website, Nancy, where you talk about in getting this project started with your mother, that you'd look in an encyclopedia and say exactly one sentence about mm-hmm. the WASPs, and then mm-hmm. talk to some elected officials and even history professors, and they didn't know what the WASPs
exactly.
were. And
exactly.
I guess this week there aren't too many people that, at least if they're paying attention, don't know what a WASP is.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. From the time we started, when even the president of Baylor University, who spoke seven languages, did not know who the WASP were, he said, this is terrible. Women need to know. Young women need to know. I want my daughters to know. And that's been our inspiration to go one more step and tell it a different way so that we could get it out there. But this has just been extraordinary. The front page of the Bangkok Times had the story of the WASP on Thursday, I guess it was. This story has reverberated, I guess you'd say, around the world. It's a wonderful story to be told at a perfect time, I think, when people are ready to listen, because these women served. They weren't looking for glory. They were just trying to help their country, and they knew how to fly. Boy, did they know how to fly. And so that's how they contributed to the war effort.
And they would have contributed more if they were allowed to. I think
absolutely.
One of the things that's pretty clear. And General Hap Arnold, of course, famously wanted them
mm-hmm.
To be part of the military and to have expanded roles, and that was voted down in Congress. And
right.
then eventually Congress disbanded all the funding, so a great deal of young women across the country weren't allowed to participate in
the
WASPs.
And the other thing, Paul, is, you know, they paid their way to go to the training program, and they paid for when their fallen sisters were sent home, they paid to ship the bodies home. There were 38 women killed, you know, who nobody paid for their funerals. The WASP took up collections for those. Mm-hmm. And then when they were disbanded, which was before the end of World War II, they had to pay their own way back home. So this thank you from America was just extraordinary, but it was so timely. I'm just glad we did it when we did.
Well, give our listeners, if you can, a nutshell version. You said that the ball got rolling on this 5 years ago to
mm-hmm.
get this congressional gold medal.
Yeah,
how did it progress from that point?
5 years ago, we wrote letters. We tried to get appointments. We put proposals together for different congressional representatives, different senators. Could not get anybody to listen to what we were saying until we opened our Fly Girls exhibit in 2008 and met Nicole Malachowski, who's now Lieutenant Colonel. She's the first female Thunderbird pilot. And she was a White House fellow at the time and spoke at the opening of our Fly Girls exhibit. And Mom really kind of challenged her, if I could be so bold. She said, "You're a White House fellow. Why don't you do something?" And I think Nicole took that up as a challenge. She's just an incredible torchbearer for these women. They are her heroes. And it was the right place at the right time with the right people with the right message and, you know, the right torch to bear, if you will. I think we all are doing this and have done this for the right reasons. And doors just sort of began to fly open. It did take a lot of hard work. But honestly, you know, God's in charge. And there were doors flying open on this that never would have been open 2, 3, 4 years ago. It was because of the kind of collision of ideas and energy and passion of women. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm not a feminist, but, you know, of women who made this happen. And the first senator that Nicole met with was Senator Hutchison, who is from Texas, who took this challenge up and got all the female senators on board as sponsors. And it took less than a year. The bill was introduced March 17th 2009, and the medal was awarded before, you know, I mean, before the end of a year. That is record time. That is just a miraculous time period. But the energy was just extraordinary to keep it rolling. And Mom can tell you, of course, about her participation in this, but she's been right there, shoulder to shoulder with all of us participating.
Well, I know our listeners are eager to hear from her, and we'll do that right after our first commercial break here in a moment. But it really does go to show you that, and we just heard about the origins of this project, Wings Across America, and we're talking to Nancy Parrish, the director of that organization. And don't you think it goes to show that if you get started in something and do the best that you can for the right reasons and just trust that the right thing is going to happen, that you'll be blown away and something you never could have imagined will actually happen?
Well, Mom has always said, with God, nothing is impossible. And, boy, this was an exponential version of that, just watching these doors fly open. Yes, the mission was absolutely for the right reasons and to tell the right story. It isn't just about flying airplanes. Their values are what are extraordinary to me, Paul. These women have lived lives of honor, courage, faith, patriotism, commitment, you know, that are just larger than life to me. And that's why I continue to be inspired by all of them.
Well, and it's pretty clear you're inspiring a lot of others in the process. I want to ask you before we let you go, Nancy, and get to your mother, what if our listeners are interested in supporting the work that you're doing or somehow participating and coming on board with you, what are the ways that they can do that?
Well, actually, we have a website. The WingsAcrossAmerica.us website has a place to go where you can donate. Donations are actually through Baylor University.
Mm-hmm.
They are our home. We are hosted by Baylor, if you will, and they have been very gracious hosts. And that's how donations can be made. Those go directly into the Wings Across America project at Baylor. We are all volunteer. Nobody makes any money on this. It's from our hearts and has been. And I think that may be why we have succeeded. I don't know. I somehow think it is. That we're not in it to make, you know, we're not trying to make any money. We're just trying to get the story out there and trying to let the WASP tell their story, basically.
And that was my next question. If there's a WASP listening or the relative of a WASP who has not been interviewed by all your crews that are going out all over the country on a volunteer basis, what's the best way for them to proceed? Should they just contact you directly?
They should contact me, absolutely.
All right.
We would love to talk to them, yeah.
And
yeah.
All of that information is linked on our website, kmjnow.com. Nancy, thank you so much for everything you're doing, and I can't wait to see where this is going to go from here after the big week that you had in Washington.
Yeah.
And Godspeed.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, that's Nancy Parrish, director of Wings Across America. We're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk to her mother, who was flying 65 years ago as a WASP for the United States. This is Hometown Heroes. You're listening to News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Paul Leffler with you on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at kmjnow.com. You hear a lot about World War II on this program every week, but it's been all over the news this past week. There's a lot of buzz about the debut of the new miniseries, The Pacific, another project put together by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. And also, if you've been paying attention this week, you saw a big news story out of Washington, D.C., where the WASPs were given a Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor our country has. By the way, if you would like to watch that entire ceremony from Washington, C-SPAN is re-airing it tonight at about 5:30 our time out here in California. We will talk to a WASP from the Golden State a little bit later on in the program, but right now we go back to Waco, Texas. You heard from Nancy Parrish, the director of Wings Across America, and I do have that information linked on our website, kmjnow.com. Now let's hear from her inspiration. Her mother joins us now. Deanie Parrish, how long has it been since you first took flight in an airplane? I imagine that was something that was pretty exciting for you way back when.
Are you trying to ask me how old I am?
Well, you can tell us if you want.
I began flying in 1942, before the WASP were ever heard of.
Uh-huh.
We had a primary school for cadets that moved into my little hometown of Avon Park, Florida. And when they moved in, those young men were all my peers. But I had gotten a job in the bank as a teller, and when their good-looking instructors would come in to cash their checks, I would talk to them. And all they wanted to talk about was flying. And one day I asked one of them, why, just because I'm a girl, why can't I learn to fly? He didn't have an answer. Mm-hmm. So I decided to find out for myself. And that's when I found an instructor, a merit instructor, who had his own airplane that he flew on weekends. And I asked him if he would teach me, and he said yes. And that's when I started flying in early 42. And then I kept flying because I thought, well, maybe the war had started. And I thought, well, maybe someday they will need some girls. And that's why I kept flying. And at the end of September of 42 is when the WASP organization was started by Jacqueline Cochran.
And Jackie Cochran, a lot of people are familiar with, but a lot of people were unaware of what the WASPs had done. And what you and your daughter have done recently has certainly made them more aware and educated a lot of folks. For our listening audience, tell them, if you can, what you did as WASPs, what the duties were, and what was exciting about it, and what made you happy and thrilled to be flying for the United States.
Well, actually, what we did was no more than what almost every American did. They did something to help our country stay free. So I feel like that what I did was no more than what Rosie the Riveter did, or the women who drove fire trucks, or anything of that nature. We all did something to help our country stay free. And I think that was the important thing. And what did we do? We first, when we went into training, we had to have at least a private pilot's license to even apply to go into Army Air Force training. Now, my husband, who was also an Army Air Force pilot, when he started training, same training that I got, he had never been in an airplane. But things were different then, and for girls, we had to have a license before we could go into training. But all the training, well, the first two classes trained in Houston, but there was not adequate facilities there, so they moved it to Avenger Field out in Sweetwater in West Texas. And we went into training, and I trained there for 7 months. It was an Army Air Force. We had civilian instructors, but all we had 40 Army Air Force officers who were over the entire base. And when we got to Sweetwater, at that time, girls dressed up all the time. We wore high heels. We wore white gloves. We wore hats, you know. And we get to Sweetwater, and we were from all over the country. And we stayed in the only big hotel there, which was maybe four stories. But anyway, the next morning we were all dressed up in our finest because we were going out to Avenger Field to meet Jacqueline Cochran and all of our instructors. So as we came downstairs and went outside, they said our transportation was there. There were three cow trailers lined up, and that's what our transportation was for the next 7 months. We got out to the airbase, and Miss Cochran was there and spoke to all of us. There were about 100 in my class to begin with. And I'll never forget what she said to us, because, as I say, it was a different time, a different feeling. But she said to us, "You may be living in a man's world, and you may be flying a man's airplane, but when you get out of that airplane, I want you to remember, you're a lady, and I want you to look like a lady, and I want you to act like a lady, and don't you forget it." So I never forgot. But then we were assigned our bays. We had six girls. We slept on Army cots in each bay. And we trained there for 7 months, the same training that any Army Air Force pilot received. At the end of that 7 months, over half my class had washed out. Mm. But the ones of us who were left, we graduated. And then we were assigned to 120 different air bases all over America. For me, I was sent first to Greenville, Mississippi, and as an engineering test pilot. If an aircraft had cracked up and had to have a new wing or anything major repair, it had to be flight tested before the instructors and cadets could fly in it again. And that was my job. But I was there about 2 months, and the operations officer said he wanted to check me out on twin-engine aircraft. And about a week after that, I got orders to report down to Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. And when I went there, it was to go through B-26 Martin Marauder training to train gunners.
Well, I got to ask you here, Deanie. First, you say that that you have to test these aircraft before the men can fly them, it makes you sound like a little bit like a guinea pig and like you're expendable. So if anything goes wrong, they just lose one of the WASPs and not one of their male pilots.
No.
And then...
No, that's not true because
okay.
we had male engineering test pilots also.
Right, okay.
Because there weren't enough of us to do everything.
So they were guinea pigs of both genders.
Absolutely.
They put you in an airplane, the B-26. I'm sure you're familiar with all the awful nicknames that airplane had because of the problems
Absolutely.
That it had.
One a day in Tampa Bay.
And you were down there.
90 miles from Tampa, and my family was not too pleased when I went into B-26 training. But then once I got through, I was retained there as an air-to-air tow target pilot to train gunners for combat. And that's what I did until we were disbanded.
Did you ever, and I have a feeling what your answer is going to be, because you've already echoed what I think is the most important message this show ever gets out, that during this time in our nation's history, everybody was doing something, and everybody was pulling in the same direction to preserve the freedom that we enjoy today, and the freedom to send all of you to Washington, D.C. for a Congressional Gold Medal. But while you were doing this and training other people to go fight the battles and to go drop the bombs and do everything that they did, was there ever part of you that wished, you know what? I would like to go fly one of those missions like the guys can.
Yes, but we knew that was impossible. When we went in, we were told, of course, that we would not be flying outside the continental United States. But what we did was we took over some of the jobs. Certainly there were not enough of us to take over all the jobs, but we did jobs to relieve male pilots for combat because they... In the early part of 42, we had lost so many combats, especially over North Africa, until there was a tremendous shortage of male pilots, combat pilots. So the jobs that we took over from male pilots so that there could be more combat pilots.
How were you treated by the male pilots? Did you get the sense that they appreciated everything that you did? I'm sure there was one bad apple in the bunch that didn't treat you so well.
Well, I never ran into that bad apple, I'm happy to say. I did my job. I never refused to do anything. And sometimes we were asked to fly, perhaps in weather that maybe the male pilots weren't flying. But it was our duty, and we did it. And I never got anything other than nice treatment. Now, I can't say that for every WASP. Because I know that some of them have told me stories of what happened to them. But for me, they were very appreciative of our help.
You know, you mentioned having to fly sometimes in bad weather. And earlier, your daughter Nancy brought up the fact that 38 WASPs were killed during World War II as they carried out their different duties across the country. Did you ever have any close calls or some times in the sky where you thought, uh-oh, this might be it for me?
Yes, I got in flying my air-to-air tow target missions. That target was not out far enough sometimes because we would have a B-24 that would come by. We would put down quarter flaps or whatever. They would come by, and they had seven turrets in that B-24, and those green gunners were shooting live ammunition with color-coded bullets at that target. And sometimes the target wasn't far enough behind us. So a couple of times got a few holes in the tail, but with God's help, I got through it.
Amen. And the other question I know our audience wants to hear your answer to, and I'm sure that if they had given you, you know, the controls of a B-26 and said, fly your way to Washington yourself this last week, I'm sure you would have done it. But what was it like to be there in Washington, D.C., and be with all those other WASPs to get an honor that I'm sure 65 years ago you didn't think was possible?
Well, it was a wonderful experience. But I was not there really to get a medal. I was there because I knew the news media would be there. And through you and all your other news people, I truly hope and pray that this is when millions of people across America have gotten an education. Because when we were disbanded, they sealed all of our records and they stamped them classified. They filed them away in the archives for 33 years. So when the historians wrote the history of World War II, They didn't know we existed because our records were not available. That is why we were left out of the history books. And that is why this was so important to me. It was not for the medal. It was to get our overlooked history into those history books. It's missing. There are missing chapters in the history of America, in the history of the Air Force, in the history of aviation, because our history is missing. So I pray that the news, and they were so gracious and interviewed so many of the WASP on the day of the ceremony, until I hope the American people are getting an education about this overlooked history, because it is inspirational history. Because what we did, we didn't compromise the values that we had grown up with just because we were pilots. Honor, honor above everything, patriotism, integrity, service, all of those things that are so important that I just feel like that the generations to come, they should be allowed to read about that history. And so I thank the news media for being so kind to us and getting and educating America. Thank you so much.
Wow. I think a lot of people are out there saying amen, sister, and they appreciate everything that you just said and everything that you've done. And for those out there that would like to see and hear Deanie at the same time, that broadcast on C-SPAN tonight is at 5:30 on C-SPAN 1, and you can see that hour-long Congressional Gold Medal ceremony, including a speech from the young lady that you're listening to right now, Deanie Parrish. You didn't tell us how old you are, Deanie, so I'm just going to call you a young lady if that's all right with you.
Do the math. We had to be 21 to get in.
Well, I know our next guest is 93, and we're going to get to your friend Vi Cowden in a moment here. But, Deanie, thank you so much for sharing your time with us this afternoon, and God bless you and Godspeed in all your efforts.
Good, and let me tell you, it was both an honor and a privilege to serve this country, and I hope every member of our armed forces today feels the same way. And God bless you for caring.
Well, right back at you. Thank you very much. That's Deanie Parrish of Waco, Texas. And again, you can find more information about Wings Across America, an outstanding program that has the same kind of ideals, the same kind of idea behind it that I'm trying to go for with this program. And they've done it on a much larger scale, I think, and a much more specified scope, which is just tremendous. WingsAcrossAmerica.us is the website. It's linked on our website, KMJNow.com. And don't forget C-SPAN tonight at 5:30. We'll take a break. And when we come back, WASP a little bit closer to home. You won't believe what this 93-year-old did 2 weeks ago, but she's going to tell you when we come back. It's Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. So often we talk to flyboys, pilots who served during World War II. This week we're talking about fly girls, the female pilots, in the news this week because the WASPs were given the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor that exists in our country. And one of the young ladies who was there in Washington, D.C. to receive that honor is 93 years young. She'll be 94 in October, and she'll probably be flying somewhere near you because that's what she did just a couple weeks ago. Violet Cowden, Vi Cowden of Huntington Beach, joins us now. And, Vi, I got to get this straight here. Just 2 weeks ago, you were doing a dogfight in the skies over the Fullerton Airport. Is that true?
That is true, and it was so much fun, I can't tell you. It was, I went up with an instructor, of course, and then the other guy went up with an instructor, and then we did a dogfight. I chased him for a while, and I had a trigger on my stick that controlled the plane, and I got a couple of shots, and And when I got the shots, well, I got a good whistle. So then I went into the pattern, and he shot at me. So I don't know what luck he had shooting me, but of course it was all just playing, and it was just so much fun.
And did they let you have the controls all to yourself?
They did, and you know sometimes these instructors are pretty tricky. You know, you think that you're flying, and they're doing it all. He kept it. and he kept telling me what to do, you know, 30-degree bank this way and that way. And I thought that he was doing most of the flying. And then after we had flown, they there was a DVD on what we had done. And by God, I guess I flew most of the time. I was so surprised, but it was so easy, and it was so felt so good and so natural.
Well, you've been doing it a while. It must be all that experience that you have. Tell our listeners how you got interested. I know that you grew up in South Dakota, and when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, it wasn't too long before you decided you wanted to do something to help, and you thought that would be getting in the air. Tell us about that.
When I was teaching in Spearfish, South Dakota, I got my private pilot's license from Clyde Ice, a barnstormer, and I had my private pilot license on the day the war was declared. The next day, I think that was on a Sunday, but anyway, on a Monday, I sent a wire to Washington, D.C., saying that I'd be glad to fly for my country, but I thought I'd just be flying up and down the coast and checking for Japanese submarines or something like that. But at that time, the program for training women hadn't even started. So I was very, very lucky that I waited a long time, and so I didn't get my call for the Air Force. So I joined the Navy, because I like their hats. I just thought I just couldn't wait anymore.
So you were a wave before you were a wasp?
No, I gave that up. I hadn't been called in yet, so I gave up my wave and my nice and the nice hat, and joined the other wasps at the Avenger Field where we took our training, and we took exactly the same training as the men.
So you traded in your Navy hat for some pilot's goggles, huh?
Oh, God. What I really traded him in for was size 44 coveralls. and I'm about 5 feet, too. But you know what? I didn't care. It was just, I was so happy to fly. I just took a belt and put it around my waist, and rolled up the pant legs, rolled up the sleeves, and I was fine.
Now, you paint a pretty good picture. That would be a sight to see, a 5'2", slender young lady from South Dakota in size 44 coveralls.
That was a sight. But, you know, I didn't care how I looked. I was just so happy to be in the program. And we were the first girls that were at Avenger Field, and the instructors thought that, you know, another group of cadets were coming in, and were they surprised? And I guess a lot of them had never ever flown with a woman before. Some were pretty neat about it, but others were a little bit unhappy.
I'm not surprised to hear that. And by the way, if you're listening at home and you'd like to see a picture of Vi in uniform all those years ago and see what she looks like these days, I've got some links on our website, kmjnow.com, to some info about our guest here, Vi Cowden of Huntington Beach. She'll be 94 in October. You heard her talk about the dogfight she had in the air a couple weeks ago. She's also been skydiving in recent years. You're a real thrill seeker, aren't you, Vi?
Well, I love the air. And I had always wanted to make a jump, you know. I thought that, you know, if you're flying, you should be able to practice, bailing out in case
sure.
you got in trouble. Well, I never got in any trouble. So after I think it was 76 or something like this, when I had my first jump. And then when the Golden Knights found out that I had jumped before, I jumped with the Golden Knights when I was 89,
I think this news article says.
Yeah, 89.
Whew.
And George Bush, you know, he jumps too.
Right.
And anyway, he was 82. And if he jumps again and jumps more than I did.
If he jumps at 90, you're going to have to jump again.
I am.
Uh-huh.
And boy, and you think I would let the President of the United States get the record of being the oldest person to fly with the Golden Knights. No, that's not my personality.
Your track record speaks for itself. Very impressive.
I guess so.
Now let's talk about, before we talk about Washington, D.C. this past week, and I know it was a big thrill for you, what did you enjoy so much about being a Wasp, and what were the kind of things that you got to do? I know you flew 19 different aircraft, probably none faster than the P-51, but did you have a favorite, and what did you enjoy about the missions that you got to carry out?
I was stationed at Love Field, Dallas, Texas, and that was an air transport command. And there they you got orders to go to the different factories and pick up the plane and take them to the point of debarkation. And in Dallas, they manufactured the P-51, and I also delivered trainers. But the P-51 would fly to either Long Beach or Newark, New Jersey, and there they would disassemble or take the wings off and coat them with a kind of a rubberized material so they wouldn't rust and get corroded, and they would send them overseas. But it was a trip that I made many, many times across the United States, and I also flew the P-39 and the 63. The P-39, we flew that to Great Falls, Montana, and then the guys picked them up and took them to Fairbanks. And then the Russian pilots came in to Fairbanks and picked up the P-39. We didn't like them. And when the boss visited Russia a few years ago, I asked this pilot, I said, how did you enjoy the P-39? He thought they were the one most wonderful planes, and we were so glad to get rid of them.
Funny how things work.
But they enjoyed them.
Well, and I have to imagine that as a farm girl from South Dakota, getting the chance to fly these expensive airplanes, these high-tech pieces of equipment at this time in the 1940s, all over the United States, had to be pretty exciting for you.
It was. I loved it. And I'm so happy when I'm in the air. I mean, just, and the worst part of flying is that you have to come back. You have to get down, back down to earth, because there's just something about it when I get in the air, even on the airlines. I just feel so comfortable, and it just seems to be that's the place I'm supposed to be.
Wow, and it sounds like you're going to stay up there for as long as you possibly can, and going on 94 in October. I don't think anyone's going to sell you short.
I tell you what, we can make a deal right now. When I get to be 100, you can interview me again.
All right. Can we do it in the air?
Is that a deal?
As long as we're in the air while we do the interview. How's that?
Okay.
And if we can do it in a P-51, no one would hear the interview. It would be too loud.
I got to fly a P-51 for about 10 minutes. We came from San Diego in the Collins Foundation had restored this airplane to mint condition. It was beautiful silver and... But anyway, we got. I flew with this Cope. I wasn't the pilot. The P-51 used to have one cockpit, but this one had two. So I got to fly it for about 10 minutes or so, and it was wonderful. And I flew from the airport in San Diego up to Long Beach, and it was so much fun. It felt so natural. I don't know what happens. I get in that cockpit, and it's just like 70 years or 60 years just went out the window.
Takes you right back. And speaking of, I've got to ask you, we're running short on time, and we'll get to what you did this past week. But I understand there was a time where you're flying a P-51 Mustang, and one of your wheels got stuck, and you had to make an unorthodox landing in that P-51. What do you remember about that?
Well, for one thing, I didn't know that I was on fire. It wasn't really a blazing fire, but when I put my wheels down to come into Long Beach, the wheel would not turn because it was locked. And when it was locked, it created all this friction, and of course there was flames coming up, out of the back. And the Tower called me and said, you were on fire. And circle the field, we're going to go, we're going to clear the field. They got the ambulances out. I used to think, well, this is so silly to have the ambulances out and the fire trucks and everything. And I thought, you know, before this had happened, I thought, you know, that really isn't necessary, but boy, did that feel good that night. I mean, to know that, you know, if something happened to me, I mean, they would be right there to try to, you know, try to save me.
It was a welcome sight, but I'm sure it wasn't a welcome sound to hear them say, you're on fire.
Oh, my God, no. But you know, you're so busy. you don't really think about it until you're down. And anyway, they took me to my sister who lives in Gardena. And the next day they said, well, do you think you want someone to, you know, at least go around the field once or twice, make a few landings? And I said, why? Why would you want to do that? He said, well, don't you feel wheezy about going? I said, absolutely not.
They didn't really know you.
Well, I guess not.
Well, and we know that you made it because you're talking to us. And yep. How about the plane? Were you able to bring it down safely without too much damage?
Well, it there was a little damage on the wheel that was locked. But, I mean, I didn't bother the wings or anything. And, of course, I don't know why they locked, but they came with the fire truck.
Well, maybe. Sorry about that. I was going to say maybe it was just to give you a story to tell us today, and that's.
I'm sure. You waited a long time, didn't you?
Well, I'm going to have you on again at some point. If we have to wait till you're 100, we can do that. But we have 5 minutes left in the show here, Vi, and I want to hear about this past week and what it meant for you at age 93 to be in Washington, D.C. and receive the Congressional Gold Medal. I'm sure you never had that in your imagination 65 years ago.
Never. But it was a little bittersweet for me.
Why is that?
Because of my friends that are no longer here.
Mm.
They did just as much as we did that were still around. And it just seemed kind of too late because they could then have had the privilege of getting their gold medal. So they didn't. They'll never know. You know how the WASPs were honored, and that was just a little bit of bittersweet for me. And I was thinking of my friends that were gone, that you know that would just have loved the day as much as we did. It was the first day when we were out at the Air Force Memorial. It was a beautiful day. Sun was shining and hardly a breeze. And when the missing man formation came by, it was, I mean, you're, well, anyway, it's hard to tell.
I can tell that the emotion is still there for you right now.
It's such a beautiful sight. And the missing man is the four planes, and one of them, you know, flies off by itself, and that's the missing man. And this time it was all the missing WASP.
Absolutely. And so that signified all those women who couldn't be there with you. And I think one of the reasons that you still do what you do and you like talking about it is to honor those who couldn't be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they were, and what was so neat, I think, is that we all, you know, we were all in there working so hard, and I didn't really know that many WASPs because I was usually flying by myself. And when I was in training, I was studying so hard that I really didn't socialize that much. So afterwards. I mean, to get to know the WASP and the organization that we have had now. I mean, I really know them, and they're just, I always think I'm doing, you know, a lot of crazy things. But let me tell you, when I get the newsletter, I mean, I'm just one of the quiet ones.
They're all as crazy as you are.
Oh, crazier.
Well, if they start jumping out of airplanes in their 90s, then they can be up there with you. Vi, I'm sorry that we're just about out of time on the program, but thank you so much for talking to me today. Thank you for serving our country, and I'll take you up on it. When you're 100, we'll have you back on the show, and maybe we'll be in an airplane somewhere.
And it was an honor for me to serve my country.
I think we can hear that in your voice. Vi, thank you so much. Take great care of yourself, and we'll be talking in the future.
I hope so.
All right.
I really enjoyed this.
Right back at you. That's Vi Cowden. She'll be 94 in October, and you heard her. If she gets another chance to jump out of an airplane, if former President George H.W. Bush breaks her record for being 89 years old and jumping with the Golden Knights, she's going to break it right back. And I'm sure if you were listening to her the way that I was, there was no doubt in your mind that she meant every word that she said. Thanks so much to Vi Cowden, also to Deanie and Nancy Parrish of Waco, Texas. Check out their website, wingsacrossamerica.us. It's linked on our website at kmjnow.com. And don't forget, if you want to watch that entire ceremony from Washington, D.C., the Congressional Gold Medal given to the WASPs, it happened Wednesday, but it's being re-aired on C-SPAN tonight. That's C-SPAN 1, and that's at 5:30 our time out here on the West Coast. Boy, it's a fascinating program today, and we'll have some more WASPs on in the future. Mother's Day is always a great time to have a female veteran on, and there'll be some other opportunities too. So thank you so much for listening today. Find more information at kmjnow.com. And join us again next Saturday at 1 o'clock when we once again visit with World War II veterans. Thanks for listening today to Hometown Heroes here on your station, News Talk 580 KMJ.